Hello, and welcome to this podcast, which is part two of a conversation I had with Bianca Papadopoulos, Senior Primate Keeper from Melbourne Zoo, Australia. My name is Ryan Cartledge from Animal Training Academy, and it's fantastic to have you all here with us today. My guest, Bianca Papadopoulos, has been working in the zoo industry, training animals for over 10 years, and in 2015, via a fellowship from the International Specialized Skills Institute, spent some time traveling around the US, visiting numerous industry-leading facilities, and attending workshops with some of the biggest names in the animal training field. In the first half of this podcast, we discussed training animals for voluntary health procedures and training groups of animals. You can download that for free on animaltrainingacademy.com. In this episode, we dive in deeper, discussing some exciting areas of future development with regards to animal training. Enjoy. We'll move on to the next goal that you had identified as important for bringing knowledge back to Australia. And that's about the role of a zookeeper being an ever-evolving one. And the component of positive reinforcement animal training is becoming more and more important. And subsequently, there is a positive push to increase its use and implementation by all zookeepers. For those keepers that have been in the role for 10, 20, even more years, they have been part of this change. And they have to be part of it. This is a big mind shift, with some taking to it more than others. Bianca, can you tell us about what you learned during your fellowship in regards to long-standing animal keepers and how they are finding this change with the time?
Yeah, definitely. A challenge I have faced time and time again, especially at Melbourne Zoo, where there isn't a huge turnover in staff with their keepers. And one keeper that works with me on primates has been just at Melbourne Zoo in the primate section for 43 years this year. Like 43 years, she hasn't moved departments, she hasn't moved zoos. So that's massive. You could only imagine how hard it would be to take on and apply new concepts such as positive reinforcement training programs. I mean, back 43 years ago, they didn't do any of this kind of stuff. So she's really had to evolve and adjust her style of keeping to, yeah, exactly what Ryan was saying before, to incorporate this push for a positive reinforcement training program. Now, Cheyenne Mountain Zoo in Colorado is one of those zoos that have changed the mindset of their keepers to incorporate training in their daily routine. At the Steve Martin and Susan Friedman workshop that I attended, we were split into small groups of four, and one of the people in my group was a man by the name of Bob Chaston. Now, Bob is the president and CEO of Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, and he answered this perfectly. And we asked how his zoo had become one of the leaders in the animal training field. He quoted that, "If I want people to do amazing things, it has to be their ideas. I lead them along the way." And as a CEO, he felt it was his job to set up the environment so that they could be successful. So they brought in Steve Martin and Susan Friedman and got them to work with the staff, and only to the staff that wanted to participate. So he didn't make it a rule that everyone had to go to the training and listen. It was open for the staff. Now, Chaston does admit that it started off pretty slowly and staff were not forced to do the training. He believed that he really didn't have that kind of influence. It would have been an illusion to think that all keepers got on board immediately, but enough of them got on board that it worked, and other keepers started seeing that those successful keepers that had gotten on board had organizational influence and were getting some benefits and reward time with their animals, and gradually other keepers started to get on board. He says that now that there are enough keepers with a training mindset, that the keepers that aren't on board and not doing that training, they don't fit in very well in the team anymore, and it took a long time and it was a long process. Now, the culture shift happened due to open-eyed and open-minded and keepers wanting to learn. They had a commitment to welfare of their animals, and that culture was already established, which helped for a great foundation. So they saw the need for animal training programs and they saw how much it benefited the welfare of their animals, so they really got on board. Now, Chaston now employs an animal behavior programs manager that oversees all animal training within the zoo. There are over 50 zoos that have behavioral managers and curators in these positions across North America. And as those zoos have made a commitment to psychological welfare of their animals, these zoos have seen the benefits and continue to be leaders in animal training due to having these successful positions that help the rest of the keeping staff, you know, to name a few, Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, Shedd Aquarium, Disney's Animal Kingdom, Denver Zoo, Chicago Zoological Society, Brookfield Zoo. They're all examples of zoos that employ behavioral managers. And if you go onto YouTube and you can type in any of those zoos and just put training at the end of it, you'll see the amazing stuff that these guys are doing. Cheston believes that management need to recognize what's going on. They need to empower the staff, use clear and open communication. They use positive reinforcement instead of aversive stimuli to promote behavior. And Steve Martin supports that statement in that he believes that is the way in changing the culture and mindset. Zoos have to start from the top down, from the leaders who understand how to empower the people and support them. And it starts with a culture that creates and supports open minds. Now, all the facilities I visited, training was not this extra task that I talked about before that keepers did if they had time, or only if a certain keeper was working they might do the training. So training is just as important as the animal's environment and healthcare. It's incorporated and a requirement of the keeper's day, and that I find is one of the main differences in our Australasian region compared to the States. Once those longer standing keepers have success with that program, you'll soon see a shift in their mindset and for the better.
Yeah, and it just makes me think that example you gave, it's all about voluntary participation, just like you were talking about with the health procedures at the start of the podcast. And it's all about empowering. You use the word empowering in there, and using positive reinforcement to reinforce desirable behaviors, which is using positive reinforcement. Would you agree? It's just using the same principles with humans as it is with animals to get the behaviors we want.
I totally agree. And that's what Bob was talking about. He's, you know, he admits he doesn't know how to train an animal, yet he is training. He's training his staff by using positive reinforcement, exactly the way that we train the animals. So yeah, I definitely agree.
So just another notch to kind of reinforce that this science of positive reinforcement applied behavior analysis works with all organisms on planet Earth.
Definitely. And there is, you know, some zoos employ researchers and scientists to back up that information. I know at Melbourne Zoo, we have a whole animal welfare team that we, you know, sometimes when we want to test these theories, when we want to see if positive reinforcement is making a difference, we can actually test stress cortisol levels in their feces. So, you know, when we implement a new enrichment item that we think to be, you know, positively reinforcing to the animals, we can test, we have a baseline of their cortisol and we can test it. And yeah, it definitely, the science backs up what we're saying right now.
I always say you can't manage it if you can't measure it. And to have teams that are measuring cortisol levels and poo is measuring it and therefore managing it. That's great, Bianca. I love that.
Yeah, it's really good.
Hey, the next thing you identified that you wanted to learn about was how research study training was conducted in conjunction with zookeepers and research scientists, which you kind of just touched on there to some degree. Can you maybe expand on this topic for us?
Yeah, definitely. I guess I researched this topic because Melbourne had decided to pair up with Lincoln Park Zoo, and this is exactly what you were just talking about, Ryan, you know, backing that up with measurable data, and this is a perfect example of it. And that's why Melbourne jumped on board. So I went over to Lincoln Park Zoo because they already have the program up and running and Melbourne hasn't started yet, and I just saw how that was implemented and who undertook the research study. And it really showed me, again, it was two teams working together. It was the research scientists that spend majority of their day behind their desks, and it was the keepers on the ground that spend majority of the day with the animals. And it was really those two teams coming together, having, you know, really great communication to enabling this project to work. Lincoln Park also build this type of research technology into their exhibits because they want their visitors and guests to be involved in it as well. So with their Japanese macaques, they attached like a glass kind of box-like room where the research scientists and the keepers would go in, and then the guests could also see the animals undertaking the training as well. So I thought it was a really great idea. This, you know, it's great doing it behind the scenes as well, but what better way to show how important and the roles zoos play in 2016 than to showcase this to our guests?
Really interesting, because I always talk about, and the other people that we have on this podcast talk about, and the people I associate talk about, about the positive effects of positive reinforcement in creating all these states that give us behaviors in our animals, like dealing with stressful situations better and exploring their environments more. And it seems to me that what you're saying is this stuff's starting to be backed up in a zoological setting by research. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely, it's definitely at its baby steps, I guess. Well, yeah, it's great to see that we're actually getting some science behind what we've been talking about for so many years about this positive reinforcement. So I just think it'll only benefit us more and get people more on board and really support this movement.
Yeah, it's nice to have that science there, because we all know it. Those of us, when I say we, that have been training animals for set periods of time, whether it be 1 year or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, we all know it, what it looks like when we see an animal that gets it, that knows it has choice, that knows it's empowered, that's been trained via positive reinforcement. It's nice to have that science there to just kind of say, yeah, we know what it is. We're teaching it to you, and here's the science behind it. It's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. There's no better way to get people on board than to show them this kind of stuff.
I agree. Hey, one last question, Bianca, before we wrap up. I wanted to ask you about the last learning goal that you had set for yourself when you embarked on this fellowship. And this had to do with new advances being made in the science of animal training. I'm fascinated to know a little bit more about this.
Sure. Now, this topic, I really could talk about it all day, but I know we're quickly running out of time. But we'll talk a little bit about it. And Susan Friedman is really leading the way in the science behind the training. Many people have forgotten that animal training is a science. So just take a second to think about medical science and think of a disease and think about how doctors treated that disease 30 years ago. Now, is it the same in 2016? Well, the answer is probably no. The science is continually evolving. Doctors are researching and finding out new ways to treat the disease. They need to adapt to that information that is continually being presented in front of them. And it's exactly the same with animal training. What I will touch on is ABA, which is Applied Behavior Analysis. Friedman says, behavior is a natural phenomenon, part of the physical world, and it should be studied like any other natural science. And like all natural sciences, explaining a phenomenon means identifying the physical events that produce it. Now, applied behavior analysis is the application of the science or the technology to solve practical behavior problems. The primary intervention goal is to change the conditions, including what trainers do, try to redesign the environment so that problem behaviors are irrelevant and ineffective and new skills are learned. The behavior level of analysis is the study of one individual in one environment, given one set of trainers and one set of conditions. And Friedman really says that over and over and over again during the workshops that she has. Now, behavior comes from genetic history, individual history, and current conditions. It starts with a random movement within the limits of biology and is redefined with the natural process of differential reinforcement. When there is an issue with behavior, there is an over-reliance on labels. Friedman states that is a defect. Trainers can't teach animals what to be, but they can teach them what to do and when to do it. Trainers can teach an animal how to approach people, relax while being touched, and take food from their hands. When an animal is observed to do these behaviors, people call it friendly and label it like that. The working definition of behavior is that behavior is not what an animal is or has. Behavior is what an animal does, given a certain set of conditions that can be measured. The ability to learn allows humans and animals to adapt to the demands of an ever-changing environment throughout each individual's lifetime. The ability to learn is human and animals' nature, their biological inheritance. Behavior is selected by consequences, and behaviors that produce valued outcomes are repeated. So behaviors that produce aversive outcomes are modified or suppressed. So changing conditions can change observable behavior. So that's really, I find, is the new advances being made in the science behind the training. They're really stripping it back and going back to those science principles rather than the labels of what we've had in the past.
So beautiful. And I think you have just summed up everything that I strive to kind of represent with Animal Training Academy. As you mentioned there, a lot of that kind of came from Susan Friedman, as well as does a lot of what I say and what I represent on my website. For those out there who don't know Susan Friedman, she's pretty amazing, isn't she?
Oh, she's one of the most amazing people I've met in the industry. And because in the beginning of her career, she had nothing to do with that animals. She is a professor of psychology, and that's how she got involved. So she really does bring the science back to training.
Yeah, and just to reinforce everything that I am striving to achieve on my website, Bianca, just let everyone out there listening to this podcast know, you know, what species does ABA work with? Tell us the expanse of the science.
It literally applies to all animals. So a rat, a lizard, a bird, to a elephant, it applies to everything.
Isn't that just so beautiful? Understanding the science lets you communicate to, like you just said, all species.
Yeah, definitely. It's just about breaking it down into little components. And I mean, all animals present behavior, so ABA goes to everybody.
I love it. Well, as expected, Bianca, that was a lot of fun. I'm inspired. I was preparing for this podcast earlier today and I was rereading what you and I were going to be discussing and I was just buzzing. We've just covered so many fascinating areas. It was so much fun. Bianca, thank you so much for being on the show today. I want to ask just before we start wrapping up, two things. One, do you have anything else you'd like to add on to the end here? And two, where would you like to see animal training go in the next 5, 10, 20 years here in Australasia and around the world?
I guess, once my reports come out, it's free to anyone to read, so the more people that read it, the happier I'll be to get feedback. And secondly, where would I like to see animal training go in the future? I would like, in a perfect world, for not just the zoo animals that I care for and other zoos care for, but the animals that we have at home, our cats and our dogs and our birds, for people to really treat training as not this extra thing or something that you need to have advanced skills to undertake, but really just understand the basics and try to apply them to your animals every day, I guess. It really does make a big difference in their lives.
Great. Thank you so much for your contribution today, Bianca. I know everyone listening will have learned so much from this podcast. And if you are listening and you haven't heard the other podcasts, then you can download all previous episodes at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. As mentioned in the last episode, Animal Training Academy is turning a massive 1 year old. It is time for celebrations. The last 12 months for me has been a roller coaster ride of fun, learning, inspiration, hard work, pleasure, and filled with the most positive and unintrusive animal training techniques. On the 11th of July 2015, the Academy went online with the first online course, The Recipe. I wasn't sure what to expect when I put it up, but within 12 hours, I sold my first course, and I haven't looked back since. Thank you so much for everyone that has supported me along the way. I do want to positively reinforce you. So I am, as mentioned last week, going to be doing something special for that 1 year celebration. I'm still brainstorming exactly what that's going to look like. The best way to stay informed is via the Animal Training Academy mailing list. You can join that for free at www.animaltrainingacademy.com just by hitting the register button in the main menu. And when you do, my labor of love in the form of a 15 lesson online course, including videos, PDFs, downloadable audios, and quizzes, is yours as a free gift. If you haven't checked it out, head over there and I'll see you on the inside. As always, a massive, massive thank you. And I want to know if you guys are liking this content. Please leave a comment under the podcast write-up. Tell me if you liked the recording. Tell me if you didn't like the recording. Tell me your thoughts, feelings, and questions. If you're sitting on a sunny beach somewhere whilst I'm editing this podcast in my makeshift garage office in New Zealand, send me a message and say hi. I'd just love to hear from you. Bianca, it has been a pleasure. And once again, thank you so much for coming onto the show this morning.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I'm glad to get this information out there.
Ditto, likewise. For all those out there listening, good luck with all your training endeavors and we'll catch you next time. Ciao.